For March the 16th, 2018, we talk about a whole bunch of strategy games, the most recent Nintendo Direct, and we ask you about your favorite rule subversions in games. Welcome to Level 234. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendez.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Jella.
Thank you. It's been a little bit.
Yeah, it's been just a little bit. Gonna put this at the top here. The audio quality is gonna be a little bit different because of technical difficulties. So if it's not the usual quality that you expect or demand, I apologize in advance. Gonna do our best. Anyway, yeah, it's good to have
Cole
you back.
Cole is gonna cover for me slurring my speech real bad. It's totally a technical difficulty here.
This is your first day off of the Whole 30, right?
It is. That is correct.
So your tolerance is way down.
Yes. Jen got off of it before me because she started it earlier and confirmed that it's like, you know, I remember my first beer territory. So we'll see where this goes.
Yeah. It will be no worse than the time I gave you beer for Christmas when we recorded and I didn't tell you it was 14%. I was like, oh, three of them, huh? That's kind of making a night of it.
I don't think it could be any worse and me still be alive.
So I did these calculations a little while ago, and Jala, now that you're here, it's worth talking about these. So whenever we have, whenever somebody's out, whenever Jala subs in, whenever there are three of us, we always talk about what is the rarest combination, right? So
yeah.
I went back in and I wrangled some data and I figured out what the rarest combinations are.
Yay.
Yeah. So I could go into a whole explanation of how I did this. It was like binary encoding. Like it was actually easier than I thought it would be. The rarest combinations separated out to four hosts and three hosts, because those are different kind of things. The rarest combination of four hosts is Cole, Dennis, David, and Jala.
Yeah.
So
because I do want to
interject. Wouldn't it be more rare if it was the four non-Cole people on the podcast?
it would indeed be more rare. But I threw out those bonus episodes because those are outliers, right?
Non-canonical. Yeah.
And I also threw out episodes where we had guests.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Good point.
I was
going to call your attention to episode four, the Butterfield bump, where technically we had Gary on.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There were a handful of those. We had Allison on, we had Tyler from Ninjas Versus Podcast on. But no, I wanted to include just the five of us as the regular hosts of the show. And yeah, there was one episode where it was that combination of the four of us, Cole, Dennis, David, and Jala. And you would think, okay, yeah, that's the rarest combination. No, because, if you look at the three styles, it is Cole, David, Jala. Again, Ben is always present in the most frequent ones.
I would say that I get the attendance award, but Cole, you actually get the attendance award here.
Yeah. So I don't think that this is actually that interesting. This is literally, I think, just for us and people who listen to the show for a long time. But like every time it like occurs to me to make that joke about, oh, this is the rarest combination, I wanted to have something to back that up. So I went ahead and I took like 20 minutes and figured it out.
And keep those of you who have the legendary level cards, keep those in plastic. They just went way up in value. And in case you're listening and don't know what I'm talking about, we actually put out a unique trading card for every single episode.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You're going to make people think that's a thing, and I'm going to get people asking for it.
Yeah, you sure are. You sure are.
What are we at? 250 some odd episodes? Like, that's like two sets in a collectible card game. Well, maybe an original set, like 250 is the right size.
Have to do it in 52 episode seasons.
Shit, I'm actually going to be working on this week. Now I'm really enamored with this idea.
Well, like honestly, okay. the way to do it is to do it almost like a magic card. Each episode's title is the name of the card, and then you would take fan submissions for art. Put it out there. And so if somebody wanted to draw like general puzzles, do like a magic style thing.
Get Renix to do it on Twitter. He's the one who did the sugar bone art.
And then make one out of every 10 of them foil so that people buy more and more packs.
Ben, you're working on some like dev stuff in your spare time, right?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Guess what you just volunteered for.
Sorry. Well, and the most common combination is kind of like not fair because I didn't show up on this podcast until 2014 when we were 70-something episodes in. So, like, the most common combination is non-Jala. Everybody else but Jala.
But I mean... So.
I was trying to, like, wait it, and then my head started hurting and just... But yeah, it's fun stats.
Yeah. Yep. So I don't know. It's just I had most of the data for who was on which episode in my spreadsheets anyway. I just had to go and like fill out like the 20th early ones to figure out what it was. So,
guys, I'm in pain.
Why are you in pain?
I went to the doctor today.
Okay.
And the nurse. Okay, this is the second time in 2 months that I have gone to the doctor and had my blood drawn for some reason. Mm-hmm. And like last month. The nurse blew the vein and then she stabbed me again and missed the vein.
Fuck's
and then
sake.
she and I had to get stabbed three times. Well, today, nurse stabs me once, blew the vein. This is a different doctor, different nurse. This is not the same place. All right. Stabs me again, this time in the muscle because they said that the vein rolled. And then finally, like, got a different nurse to come in and stab my other arm because they stabbed all the veins they could conveniently see in the one arm.
Yeah.
And then the other lady goes and stabs me and gets the blood out, but left this giant fucking welt on my arm. And now both of my arms are sore as hell. And let me show you the pictures. You've got to see.
Content warning about the needle stuff, man.
It's just like my arm with a welt on it. And it's just like, it's fucking irritating. So anyway, I was so mad. The first two pictures, that is my swollen ass left arm, and I'm left-handed, so not nice. And then the other one is two little pricks on my other arm, which is a normal size. So giant, giant welt on my arm. And it's still there, and it still hurts. And I'm like, great, thanks. You just fucked up my training for tomorrow. So
some of my worst memories, medical memories, are being, you know, younger and just the struggles to get an IV in. I can't.
Here's the thing. I have never in my life had a problem getting stuck with a needle and then finding the vein and, you know, whatever. Like, my veins are near the surface and real easy to see and real big. So no big deal.
Yeah.
Except the last couple of months, I've been like the magical unicorn where they can't fucking find my veins. I guess I'm just so super powered that my motherfucking veins are dodging attacks.
They're being surrounded by your muscles.
They have high evade.
Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
So
now, if the nurse who's coming to stick you doesn't have gray hair, you send her out of the goddamn room.
This guy was the guy who stuck me for the last like 2 years. I've gone to this doctor and he has never had a problem. And he is an ex-Marine. And it's like, okay, I'm not going to threaten you, but like, you know, although I could take him. But anyway, that's not the point. But anyway, that's my story. I'm in pain right now, guys.
I'm sorry. Ben, how are you? So Dennis just finished the whole 30. I was messing with spreadsheets. Jala's in pain. How about you, Ben?
I played board games over the weekend. Ooh. And South by Southwest started over the weekend. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, some of it's cool. The music's cool. And then the lots of people in town and everything being busy is not cool. So, you know,
yeah,
there's pros and cons.
Do you have the option to, like, if you need to avoid driving, can you stay off of the Austin highways during South by? Or?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's not too bad. It's just in my normal walks around my neighborhood, it's a lot more populated, which on the one hand can be cool if you're, you know, but if you're trying to like be antisocial, then it's harder to do.
Yeah. Huh. Well, it sounds like we've got an episode ahead of us if you've got board games and all of that. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I tried.
Treasures abound.
I tried to stick the landing, but I couldn't. But we've got the usual kind of brief for you, the usual kind of episode for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And why don't we get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Dennis, you and I brought the same story just kind of highlights from the Nintendo Direct that was last week.
Stories.
Yeah, this is huge.
Yeah, they usually crush it with the directs, but they crushed it with this direct.
Yeah, usually the direct is more focused on one or two titles, and there's a big mm-hmm. announcement on the back of this. But I'm very, very curious about some of these smaller ones. The big one.
Do you just want a tag team?
I've got a different list. So
go.
Okay. The big one is they announced Smash Brothers for the Switch, which seems mm-hmm. like the inevitable obvious move because the Switch is a party in a box and everybody's invited. But yeah, they put out a big announcement trailer. I'm not sure if this is just an updated re-release of the Smash Brothers for Wii U or if it's kind of its own thing. But
it's at least got new characters.
Yeah, because it has the Splatoon people.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And goddamn it, if that Solaire amiibo does not show up in Smash, I will throw my computer.
It would be very cool if Solaire was a playable character in Smash. That would actually be a thing. So that amiibo is actually being released alongside the Switch version of Dark Souls, which they said is getting a network test. The amiibo immediately sold out. It's GameStop exclusive, and all the pre-orders were taken. Jala.
I had to tell you, I had a dream, if it wasn't last night, it was the night before. I don't know. My days have blurred together. I had a dream that I was playing Dark Souls on my Switch.
Okay.
That was my dream. That was my dream. That was it. I dreamed about a video game that's coming out, very soon. And it was just a realistic ass. I'm playing it on my Switch.
Are you that excited for Dark Souls on the Switch?
Like, I would say that, yes, I'm going to play the shit out of it when I get it, but, I'm not going to be pre-ordering and buying it right away, because guess what? I have a lot of backlog, and I'm in the middle of, three games right now, so whatever. But, it was just real random, and I don't normally have dreams that make sense, let alone dreams that, are that inane. And, what is this? I'm dreaming about something that's coming out soon. What is this boring-ass dream I'm having?
Are you sure that wasn't just a commercial?
Right?
like Futurama, where they insert marketing into people's dreams?
It pretty much. I was just like, what? I don't even know. So anyway, continue. You can keep talking about the important thing now.
Yeah.
No. So by the way, if you haven't seen the trailer for Smash on the Switch yet, don't go watch that. Go watch the video of the room's reaction to the trailer, because it is infinitely more fun.
Yeah.
Like, it's to the point where, the camera is literally, vibrating, shaking, because everyone is up and cheering so loud.
Like, it'll never be funnier than that person who was openly weeping when they revealed Twilight Princess. that's always going to be the high water mark for me.
Yeah.
But I guess I just like laughing at people crying, so.
It balances out. Balances the universe out.
Need to do some kind of introspection on that. Yeah, I really want one of those Solaire amiibos, but I doubt that I'm going to be able to get one for anywhere close to. I bet you I'll see it at Portland Retro Game Expo for $50, and that is too much for a tiny little dingus.
It's not. Amiibos aren't even the greatest of quality of sculpted items. So I mean, whatevs.
Yeah. I like Solaire, and it's difficult to get little statues or figures of Solaire.
Go to Etsy. I'm sure you'll find plenty.
They're more costly than I want.
Yeah.
I want one that is amiibo priced. Yeah.
You don't like amiibo him that much.
right. Yeah. What was another thing in this that stuck out to you, Dennis?
Well, other stuff coming to Switch. There's a ton of ports. Crash Bandicoot, of all things, which had Crash come to multi-platform before and I just didn't know about it.
So the classic Crash games, no. I had the same reaction that you did, thinking, whoa, is this a first? No, but when they went to the PlayStation 2, Xbox, GameCube generation, mm-hmm. all those ones that were not developed by Insomniac?
Naughty Dog.
All the ones that were not developed by Naughty Dog ended up coming multi-platform. So you had Crash Mutant Madness or whatever coming out for the Xbox and the GameCube. So this is not its first multi-platform foray.
Yeah. What's crazy to me is that, reading this sentence closer, I was going to say, they say the Insane Trilogy is coming to Switch, which is the original three Crash games. But no, it's just saying Crash Bandicoot is returning to Nintendo. Crash Bandicoot is returning to a Nintendo console for the first time in years with his recent Insane Trilogy.
Crash 1, 2, and 3 have never been out on a Nintendo system.
Gotcha.
But they did.
Okay,
have
but the Insane Trilogy is a remake of those, which is coming to the Switch.
Correct.
Gotta draw that diagram in my mind. Anyway, so that's coming. Okami is coming, and then Undertale is coming, which is delightful.
If you can make your Switch battery last long enough to get you through the opening intro and cutscene of Okami, then I owe you a Coke.
Well played.
Yeah. Undertale's coming to Switch eventually. Eventually is underlined there. Makes perfect sense. Undertale works well on PSP. It makes sense for them to literally sell a million copies elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was excited to see. So they're bringing Captain Toad to the Switch and 3DS. Captain Toad is a cool little like spinoff game from Super Mario 3D World. It just kind of confirms my suspicion that their plan is to take anything of note from the Wii U's library and put it out on the Switch. It just is like a do-over. Because like Captain Toad was another one of those things that was like, okay, the Wii U is no longer a thing, but man, it had a couple of good games, like say Captain Toad. I would be surprised if we get out of this year without an announcement of a port of Super Mario 3D World.
Yeah, sure. That'd be really cool. Also, the Switch wasn't the only console that got love. WarioWare Gold has been announced for the 3DS.
Fuck yes. Put it straight in my dick. Yeah.
Okay, Cole.
No, I'm very excited about a new WarioWare game.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, really. I was unaware.
That phrase crossed my mind. I was like, no, that's too crass to say out loud. I'm like, no, I'm just gonna try. I'm gonna try that.
And then
look
it was
on.
Already out.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Octopath Traveler, the follow-up to Bravely Default, gets a release date this summer as well. So yeah, like a good gaggle of announcements from this.
Yeah. What is? I recognize Bravely Default's name. I couldn't tell you anything about that game.
Throwback JRPG developed primarily, you know, for the 3DS. Octopath Traveler it actually looks kind of snazzy. There's a demo out for it, but it's supposed to be like a harkening back to like Chrono Trigger, like SNES RPGs.
Okay, very cool.
You say Octopath Traveler, and I just think Octodad Traveler, like Octodad going around the world, you know, like 80 Days style.
Octodad.
But Octodad.
Don't ruin the DLC.
Yeah. So, I don't know that I have anything else to add on top of that. Ben, as the resident Smash Brothers fan, are you excited about the Switch one? You going to grab that bad boy?
I mean, I might get it, but it's one of those things where it's like I usually like the older Smash Brothers. I think like Wii and forward, I've played those a little bit in passing, but I'm not like hugely into them. So mostly it's just the N64 one for me. So
okay, yeah.
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 But, you know, if I have friends coming around to play a bunch of games, then I'll probably pick it up. Yeah. So.
I was going to say, you have friends, Ben. I know.
Yeah.
So, anything else about this Nintendo Direct?
Those are the highlights.
Those are the highlights. Let's slide on over. Ben, I'm curious about this this Valve story. They're lying to us, right?
Yeah, I feel like I say this story like once a year, so it's like that time of year again. But Valve released a statement saying that they were going to be developing and shipping games soon. They didn't really indicate how many that they were. We've already talked about the game, I think, Artifact. I think we mentioned this like a year, 6 months ago, which is like a card-based game similar to Hearthstone that Valve's working on. And they're putting it out they're developing it with the guy who made Magic the Gathering. I forget his name. But in addition to that, they said that they were planning on releasing several other games after that. And I think a year ago, Gabe Newell said that they were developing a standalone game in the Half-Life Portal universe that was like new IP they were working on. So this is kind of just validating that some more.
I'll be curious. Like if Artifact is their big thing. I remember like the initial story about that was like they got up on stage and said, oh, we've got something brand new. And of course, everybody's going to think it's going to be something on the order of Half-Life 3. And then everybody was kind of, you know, have the air let out of them, because it is something that is akin to Dota, where it is a game as a service kind of thing, right? As opposed to a boxed, finite thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say, like, I have literally no opinion about Artifact. Like, it might as well just be like beige wallpaper to my sensibility. But
one other curious quote that was pulled from the article, and I'm not sure how old it is Gabe Newell talking about Valve being jealous of Nintendo, in the sense that when Nintendo develops new games, they also
fuck yeah.
Yeah.
I'm keeping that in. That was too awesome to cut.
All right. Yeah. Apparently there's a lot of motorcyclists around for South by Southwest.
Who, like, almost have engine. A sick burn ready to go because he's revving up his jet ski.
So the other thing too is, like, low frequencies come in a lot louder than they actually do in real life. Uh-huh. So I think it'll sound a lot louder than it actually is.
Baller.
Sorry about that.
Yeah,
so Gabe Newell was mentioning that they have a little bit of jealousy towards Nintendo because when they're developing a game, they're developing both the game and the hardware they're using for the game at the same time. And right. So they kind of have that flexibility. Whereas, like, when Valve's developing a game, they're kind of locked into these are the controllers that they can use. They have a little bit of flexibility with that since they introduced the Steam controller. Yeah. But he was talking about how they've previously invested a lot in hardware, and that's, like, opened up a lot of doors for them. And so now they might be able to leverage that with the new games that they're making.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I think the main hardware that they have is Steam VR and then the Steam controller. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Judging by how quickly the Steam controller went on sale, I don't think it really shattered the world. I love mine, but I don't. Mm-hmm. That would be a very strange thing for them to bank on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, fingers crossed. Maybe this will turn out to be something real cool. I just
if not, I'll probably have the same news story in a year from now. So.
I can't wait for 20 years when it actually comes out.
Just gonna just keep checking back. Yeah. Oh man, talk is real cheap for Valve. Oh well. Hey Jala, what is this with Where the Water Tastes Like Wine?
Yeah, so I saw a review about this in the Washington Post, and I had no idea what the fuck it was, so I figured I would mention it here because it sounds real cool, and I think some of the listeners will dig this from the description. So it's a new indie game that just released at the end of February from Dim Bulb Games and Serenity Forge, published by Good Shepherd Entertainment. And basically, in this game, you are a hitchhiker that's trekking across America during the Great Depression. You encounter all different kinds of people along the way. Think about, like, Grapes of Wrath style. The review even mentions, you know, John Steinbeck, Maya Angelou, and Studs Terkel. So Sting, for some reason, is one of the voice actors, but the rest are relative unknowns. Mm-hmm. Sting plays a card-playing direwolf in a suit, and Sting himself referred to this character as a gatekeeper of the line between truth and falsehood, whatever that means. The artwork is kind of like a thick and rough style that's similar to, like, a woodcut type of look, you know, style. You play a skeleton, guys.
Yep.
You're a skeleton.
Nice.
And many of the stories that you hear involve ghosts or monsters or things like that, that you hear from the other travelers that you come across. And sometimes you come across campfires where you can retell the stories that you hear on the road from other people. And basically one of the goals is to learn the full breadth of every story that you start hearing, and to use those stories to open up new comrades to telling their own tales. It's kind of like a puzzle, but, like, you know, with a human experience kind of edge to it.
You'll meet people who ask for specific kinds of stories. Like, I want to hear a scary story, or a, you know, like a tense story.
Yeah. And you have to, you know, have one in your repertoire to get that person to open up. And if you don't have one, then they're kind of, like, more reticent and they don't want to talk to you or whatever. So, like, you know, you have to kind of build up that vocabulary of, you know, stuff in your arsenal to you know, whip out at the campfire to talk to people as you travel across America on this map. So it looks like it's real cool. I'm definitely going to be taking a look at that. I put it on my wish list, but, you know, I have a lot of stuff on my backlog. Who knows when I'll get to it, but, like, it sounds cool, and it just recently came out. So
it's come up on several of the video game podcasts I listen to, mostly because it has a very strange, like, writing credit almost, So they got indie game writers, including like, you know, Lee Alexander or some of the people behind like Gone Home. Basically all of these people from the indie game kind of space to write their own short stories to be included in the thing. So like when a story comes up, it doesn't just say who's like voice acting or reading this thing. It'll say who actually wrote it. So that's actually a huge, you know, a huge reason why people might have heard about this before is because a lot of people are involved in it.
Well, usually usually when there is a game that I am like the last person to know about, everybody else on my Steam list, like all my friends on Steam, which are all like podcast people, usually not all of them, but a large chunk of them, they all have already got it on their wish list or own it. And like the only person who is interested in and like has this on their wish list is Brian Wade, and nobody else owns it. So like if nobody owns this, I'm guessing that a lot of listeners have not heard about it yet or recently heard about it and have not looked at it yet. So
it's it also hasn't sold very well.
I think it's only like $20 or something. So
if you end up playing it, I'll be curious to hear what you think about it.
Yeah, for sure. And then I can flip a table about whatever it is at the time.
The slow walking speed, I think, is the thing.
Well, I don't know. Like, I was okay with Morrowind and the slow walking speed in that because I was gathering mushrooms everywhere and like plants.
I don't think this has mushrooms for you to gather.
I know. That's the sad part. If there's no mushrooms, then there's no deal.
Yeah.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer that question. This week, Dennis, you put out the question. So what did you ask the nice people?
I did. So I wanted to know about when games subvert their own rules and conventions. So, you know, every game kind of builds you up on a set of mechanics and rules and conventions, and then great games will find ways to turn those on their head at some point. So what is the most interesting way you've seen a game subvert its own rules?
Yeah, so I'll get us started here with Greg, who says, after listening to the WoF episode about it, I played Portal 2 in co-op with Jala. It's a really fun, it's really great and fun how that game builds up your use of the portal gun and then forces you to think of various ways to use it that go beyond what you were taught. You have to make some leaps in your logic to figure out how the game wants you to use the gun in different ways. Specifically in Portal 2, does the co-op or the multiplayer use the goo at all?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that was, for me, as somebody who came into it with knowledge of Portal 1, figuring out how to get those to work. Like, that's more of a series subversion kind of thing. But, you know, getting ready to mix those up or mixing those up was the subversion for me. Maybe not a subversion, but an articulation or a
We'll paint that term with a broad brush for the purposes of this question.
Let's see, Jala. What does John say?
John says, tough question. And by the way, that was a lot of people's response. But anyway, most interesting way may be how Square designed Final Fantasy VIII to allow for avoiding earning XP while still gaining AP. You can even manipulate enemy levels so you can draw high-level spells without leveling up your party. Being able to break a game, that happens all the time. It is much rarer to build it into the mechanics in such a way that it subverts the average RPG player's expectation. Honestly, they should have jettisoned XP altogether, but my guess is they figured doing so would be too confusing for fans of the series.
Yeah, if they just left the non-XP ways of progressing in Final Fantasy VIII, it would have been more confusing than like Vagrant Story. It would have been too much. I like playing Final Fantasy VIII like it is a regular Final Fantasy, where leveling up is a good thing, is a surefire way to fuck yourself, because enemies get stronger as they level up faster than you do.
Yay.
Yeah, it's a neat and interesting system. You also don't have to level up enemies to get higher level draws. You breaking that game involves playing the card game, playing Triple Triad, which, yes please.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
You're just all about those games in the games, huh?
I mean, like, I didn't really care for Gwent that much, but like Triple Triad is my, I know, Ben, I know that breaks your heart. No, Triple Triad is my canonical, like, yes, I will stop everything to play Triple Triad.
Did you like the little dice rolling game in Sorcery?
A little bit, yeah. I'm generally not that big of a fan of dice.
Did you like Pazak and Star Wars Knights of the Republic?
Yes, I liked Space Poker an awful lot. Deck building Space Poker? Yeah. Or Space Blackjack, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, Pazak is very good. Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Michael say?
Michael says, Breath of Fire Dragon Quarter had an interesting mechanic. Once you unlock dragon powers, the beast slowly takes over your body. This is represented in-game by a dragon percentage meter. You're unstoppable when you use the powers, but it makes your percentage go up. Hit 100% and you get a game over. The game cleverly subverts this in the last boss fight, who is only possible to beat by pushing past 100%. Every instinct screams to hold back, but you have to intentionally self-destruct to win.
That sounds pretty sweet.
Yeah,
that's a great example.
I really want to play Dragon Quarter. I had no idea about that, but that makes me want to play it so bad.
Not back-to-back right after Breath of Fire 3.
No, I know what I'm playing after Breath of Fire 3.
Oh, do I get to hear about it?
I can say it, but I will blank it out for everybody.
Ooh.
Yeah, so nobody nobody else gets to hear that.
Yay!
Yeah.
When do you start?
I'm projected to beat Breath of Fire 3 sometime in the next 2 weeks. So
okay, cool.
John's response made me realize, Cole, remember when we were talking a couple weeks back about me just button mashing my way through Final Fantasy six?
Yes.
Yeah. You will be pleased to know that about like 10 or so encounters in, there's a whelk that its shell, if you attack its shell, it does massive damage.
Oh, that's like one of the first bosses. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like right up front. And that wipes out your party real quick if you just button mash. So,
well,
congratulations,
that,
it is a game.
For that, you can just wait.
Yep. Well, that's against the ethos of button mash.
Oh, so you're just talking about like XXXXX. Like just...
Yes, that is okay. No targeting, no thinking, no nothing. Yeah. Just XXX until the battle's over.
Okay. That makes sense. Neat. Yeah.
I think waiting can be a game mechanic. I'm not going to go see how far I can get just by waiting and pressing X.
No, but I mean just like the difference between playing the game by mashing X as quickly as possible versus only pressing X, right?
Gotcha.
Like if you're able to just like let the active time battle meter fill up to where he, you know, pops back out of his shell, then, you know, then you could possibly get around it.
Yep. Yeah, totally. At least for that boss fight, but I think that instills some faith that the remaining fights would add enough mechanics along those lines that I wouldn't be able to get completely through.
You would eventually find an enemy that was resistant to physical attacks or just like completely immune to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, for me, it is remake, the RE colon make. Zombies are slow and they can't get through doors. Take them down or run past, it's all good. Wait, is that a crimson-headed dude? That can't be much of a... Oh, God, it's coming through the door. Run, run, run.
Yep. Oh, man, that is still one of my favorite moments in games, when you come back and realize every zombie you killed can get back up and be as strong as or stronger than a hunter.
Isn't it you have to, like, light them on fire or something that stops them from getting back up?
So you either light them on fire with a thing of kerosene, or if you shoot them with a flame round from the grenade launcher... that will cause them to light on fire. Certain attacks, so a critical pistol attack or aiming up with your shotgun will blow up the head. Mm-hmm. And that will stop them from coming back as well. But what it's trying to tell you to do is, like, it's not necessarily a bad thing to dodge and run. Like, clearing out the house, you just don't, like, that's not an ability that you have in this.
Yeah, I distinctly remember that, like, that is built into a lot of horror games. So
yeah.
It's like, a subversion, not just for that game, but for everything else.
Yeah, but like in this one, it is specifically saying, oh, so you played this before, huh? Well, fuck you. Jack writes, I don't know if this counts as a game breaking in its own rules necessarily, but man, Eternal Darkness. It was understood that there would be sanity effects, but deleting saves, fading a volume bar, blue screening... The way this game messed with the player, not just the gameplay, with its effects, broke all the rules of gaming, period. It's a very specific subversion because, like, playing Eternal Darkness now, that it doesn't work. It barely makes sense. Because, A, you don't see the blue screen of death anymore. Like, it's not a thing on Windows. most of the like video effects, like some of the ones that require being on an analog CRT, don't really work anymore. I observed all of this when I played it on a stream, like, oh yeah, this is actually really antiquated and tied to a particular time and place. Yeah. So
I wonder what you would do to get it updated. Like, would a remake update all those effects?
One of the best ones, and this game is a little bit old, so I feel fine bringing it up. Pony Island, a game that is about
arcade-ish game.
Yeah, arcade-ish game that has a bit of
Steinbergen.
Yeah, like you're playing against the devil. Like it's, you know, like the devil has developed this game and wants you to play forever. It has a few of those, including you play it on Steam, it will pop up a Steam chat message.
Yeah.
Yep. Of like just like a random friend like saying something really mean about you. I fell for it. I was like, oh my God, like did this person not like something I said on the show? And like I hit them back and they were like, what are you talking about? I was like, well, it's not here. What is it? And then like a week later, somebody messaged me and said, why did you say that thing? I was like, oh no, it's the game, I swear.
Oh, that's great.
Oh man. Jala, what does Justin say?
Justin says, in the first person sneaker, The Chronicles of Riddick, Escape from Butcher Bay, you playing as Vin Diesel, commandeer a combat mecha. It's invincible, so your brief time with it is pretty empowering.
You know what? Escape from Butcher Bay is a really good game.
It is. You know, I played part of it and I just never finished it. I need to go back to it and do it.
Yeah,
it was one of those games that was released like really late in the console that it was for. Mm-hmm. And so not a lot of people got to it, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of people disregarded it because like, a licensed game doesn't have any right to be that good.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
Well, in the opening sequence of it, if I remember correctly, is like very adventure gamey, where you're like, you know, walking around and talking with the other inmates. And it's kind of puzzly and not very actiony at all.
Yeah.
Until you actually make your break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. and get your ability to do your stealth. You get the special eyes. That I like the way Justin phrased this. That you're playing as Vin Diesel. Yeah. Not that you're playing as.
I know. I like that too because it's like, no, you're not playing Riddick. You're playing Vin Diesel.
I about said, oh, it's not like you're playing as Xander Cage. That's right. It's a crossover.
Triple X. I will say. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say Triple X Escape from Butcher Bay, but it would be the same thing. Continue, Dennis. I'm sorry.
Just in very sneak heavy games, having a section that's just like, all right, fuck them up. Yep. You know, go loud. That is always really fun.
Oh, yeah. It's a nice little reward. It's a treat. Mm-hmm. Ben, what does Graham say?
Graham says, for the main plot, Disgaea is a very typical tactical RPG, but the game after the end quickly minimizes the importance of tactics and invalidates a lot of the player's customization. Disgaea is legendary for its post-game grind, and although I've not gotten that far into Disgaea's god stats post-game, I am fascinated by it. Beyond the credit sequence, Disgaea becomes a puzzle of deducing how to raise the best, most powerful player characters and unlocking every option of the ability one can. It's about optimizing character growth and leveling up stats to a billion.
Yeah. Disgaea is the game where everything, including your items, can be leveled up to 9,999.
Nice.
And all of your stats can go up to 9,999. Yeah, that's true. I never thought about it that way, but like, the path that they ask you to walk does require you to like get rid of everybody's specialization.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good point. Dennis, what does Adam say?
Adam said, well, he starts off by asking, do all the fourth wall breaks in the Metal Gear Solid series count? And I would say yes, because I actually mm-hmm. thought of this as I was writing it. I loved it when Psycho Mantis made my controller move, and in the GameCube, Twin Snakes and Snake looks into the camera and nods. Hold on. And in the game, Cube, Twin Snake. Those are a lot of words together. Yeah. Anyway, yes. or when Revolver Ocelot looks at the camera and said not to use auto fire or he'd know. That's great. Uh-huh. Which I had an auto fire controller for PlayStation. It totally works and there was no consequence.
Yeah, he can only detect certain kinds of auto fire. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I would say this. Like, it is, again, playing with the ontological rules of, you know, playing a game that is plugged into a television. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's paid off in Metal Gear Solid 4, which initially when it came out, the PlayStation 3 didn't have vibration in its controller. The Psycho Mantis character attempted to do the "let me move your controller for you," which requires using the you know, the vibration, and like it was played off as like, oh, the powers are degrading because I cannot reach it, like I cannot I cannot vibrate your controller to make it move across the floor because blah blah blah. And then when they released the DualShock, they, you know, they played it straight.
That's great.
Yeah. Let's see. It's me. Lindsay writes, Dark Souls 1, all the great lords, well, the areas in general. It makes you walk over lava, walk invisible platforms, go in pitch black darkness, and fight enemies you have to be cursed to kill without a bonfire. Well, while it is somewhat fun to change it up so much, it made me take 3 years to get through. And then he screams Dark Souls. I'm not going to scream Dark Souls.
That is the invisible walkways, I think, on the way down to Seath.
Yeah, yeah,
on the crystal are just the biggest F you. And if you weren't connected to the internet and able to see like the soapstone messages in thin air, mm-hmm. I don't know how anyone could be expected to get that.
You have to pay attention to the snow particle effects.
But oh, yeah. Is that it?
Yeah, huh. Yeah. Like the you can see the snow land on the bridges.
That's great.
That's a pro tip for you, Jell.
Yeah, because you know I'll be this. Like it's funny that you say that because literally when he was when you were reading the answer, I was like taking notes. I'll vaguely remember this later and be like, what the fuck was it for this one? Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Yep. Each of those areas did. They leaned on a gimmick really heavily. Some to better effect than others, but I don't think anybody would call any of those the highlights of the game.
Well, of course, think about it. I'm also the person who's like very busy and Dishonored. Instead of killing people, I'm staring at the floor at the little roaches and how flat they look. I mean, like me noticing a random little thing in a game is not a problem.
You would have seen it. The way that the Crystal Cave is designed, though, is such that it's disorienting which way is up, especially as you're fixating on, you know, not falling off of these invisible things. So it is a very disorienting kind of effect.
Oh, yeah. Great. Then we can hear me get mad about it later whenever I get there.
Jala, what does Mike say?
Mike says, I've always liked how for the vast majority of Half-Life 2, the gravity gun is cool and useful, but not necessarily powerful until the final act when it becomes superpowered and basically makes you unstoppable.
I was going to bring that up when one of you mentioned the kill everything section of a stealth game. As an example of that, but then I saw Mike already beat me to it, so I didn't want to steal his thunder.
I always kill everything. I like
that. Yeah.
We talked about the bodies piled up, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Never have Jala play Hitman. Sorry, I would never ever end
the game ever. I'd just be very busy.
There's always another hit.
No witnesses. by which I mean no witnesses left alive. Ben, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, after you guys discussed Into the Breach, I had to buy it. Having perfect information changes the way of this style of game plays significantly. I also was hoping that enemies were aiming for me. It gives you seemingly useless tools to defeat the enemy. What an interesting game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll slide in here. One of the other things that made me think of this question was the volatile Vec from Into the Breach. Some missions, there will be an enemy, a rather powerful one, on the board that you're assigned to keep alive until the end of the mission. Mm-hmm. And it's trying to kill you and the buildings around you just as hard as everyone else is. it becomes this game of like, all right, how do I move him around without inflicting damage, or how much damage can I inflict to him while moving him around to
and not killing him?
Without killing him. And so it adds just a completely different layer to the game.
Hmm. Yeah. Dennis, what does Chris say?
Chris says, here's a fun recent one for me. If you think Doki Doki Literature Club is a boring anime dating sim, you're right. For a while, at least. And then he laughs maniacally. There you go, yeah.
That's pretty great. I wonder if he ever finished the letter, because like he got on this kick where he was playing a bunch of Visi Knobs like that. So, and Greg got him to play the letter. I don't know if he ever finished.
It's a big game.
He seemed like he was playing that for a while, and it was just like I kept on seeing his his little posts on Facebook, mm-hmm. and I'm like, it will never end, I guess.
Yeah. Doki Doki Literature Club is, again, it's another one of those like a Metal Gear kind of thing.
Well, my answer is actually kind of similar to that, actually. Although it's not that game, obviously. But
yeah.
Anyway, we'll get there.
Okay, yeah, we'll get there. And I'll finish this out with Juan, who says, Binding of Isaac, tier mechanics, they go in four directions and can't go through objects. Until you pick up that first Are You a Wizard pill that will ruin a run in that 60-second window. Or them flying spectral scythe tiers. Also good. And this is a good time to plug Everything to Guppy, the show. It is a Monster of My Podcast style show that Gary does with Will Hughes of the AV Club that is about Binding of Isaac items.
Ta-da!
My answer is short, and I also don't want to go into too much detail about it because it will spoil too much, but the end of Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People who've listened know. People who haven't played it. Go play it, and then you'll know what I'm talking about. Jella, how about you? What did you tease earlier?
Hatoful Boyfriend? Uh-huh. So, I don't want to go into the reasons why, but it basically takes all the usual rules of a dating sim-type visual novel and then wrecks them by what happens to the main character halfway through. And from there, the rest of the tone and the purpose of the game just flies off in a fucking weird direction you never would expect. And it's very memorable and very fun and, like, not anything that you were expecting out of that game. Like, you have to put up with the first half of it, but the second half is like, what the hell is this? Also, I had a second one. Just a shout out to Ash. Remember, Kyle was mm-hmm. on, and he was, he had his game that he made. That it is a disempowerment mechanic throughout the game as you approach death. Your main character gets weaker over time, not stronger. So, and it's JRPG. So, there you go.
Nice. Sorry, my voice was down. Nice.
I picked up Hatoful Boyfriend again, hearing that might be in our future somewhere. And the idea that it could go more zany and random and off the rails is scary to me.
Oh, you do. Like, you will just be like, mind blown. What the shit is this? Like, seriously, when you get to it, and you're just going to be like, you're going to be in denial that you're there.
you'll know.
You're going to be like, no, they're faking me out, right? This is not what's happening. No, it is.
Nice.
We'll save that for another time. But yeah.
Ben, how about you?
I got two. So the first one is the Arkham games. In every game, there's usually some point where they'll subvert like what the controls are for the main character, or they'll subvert what your goal is, where you kind of have to like start doing things that you are not used to doing. And I think another company is Naughty Dog. Pretty much in all their games, about 2/3 way through the game, they'll usually put you in a completely new situation that you're not used to, where again you'll have to like redefine like what you're doing with your controls and like what your main objective is.
Yeah.
I
used a very good effect in Last of Us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then Dennis, round us out.
Yeah, so I mentioned Into the Breach. Then the other one that I thought of that is the picture or the image for this question was Dead Space with the stasis. I think they called them Twitchers, which are the necromorphs that have like stasis built into them and therefore move incredibly fast. So the entirety of the game, you're taught to like approach these creatures very methodically and slow them down and then pick off the limbs. And it's like, it's very, methodical. And then they introduce these Twitchers, which are moving at super speed, and stasis just gets them down to normal speed for you. And so then you're just in crazy, like just shoot the shit out of it mode.
Yeah.
Just hit it with one stasis module and then just close your eyes, pull the trigger and, don't stop until nothing is making noise in the room anymore.
I'll conserve ammo later.
And in a game that, once you really get that rhythm down and you get that kind of series of events and you kind of have your heuristic for how you take out the necromorphs, you can start kind of feeling empowered and in control, and then it throws this at you and completely blows that up.
Yeah, and that's a very late game addition too. It's like it's in the last third of the game that you get to the abandoned ship that has those.
That's correct. Yeah. So they save some really good stuff for the end of that game.
Yeah. Neat. Well, thank you everybody for responding to that. If you would like to participate in these, follow our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. And those go up on Monday afternoons. So thanks to Jala and Dennis.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, you weren't here last time, so I will throw it to you.
Okay. So, I played a little bit more of Samus Returns, not a whole hell of a lot. I basically killed a couple of Metroids, and I don't have anything else to really add about that, except the last time I was on, I said that Greg gave me Samus Returns, but it was actually Briar that gave me Samus Returns. Greg gave me Steins Gate Zero, which is sitting on my Vita to be played sometime when I get there.
Yeah.
So I had a confusion, and I attributed the wrong game to the wrong person, so sorry. But anyway, I don't have anything to say. I played a little bit more. Basically what happened is that I have my Switch and my 3DS both on sleep mode laying on my nightstand, and I just, I was done with Breath of the Wild, which I'll talk about in a second. Uh-huh. I was done with that for a while, and I wanted to switch over to my 3DS and play whatever, and I already had Samus Returns up, so I played a little bit and then closed it and then promptly bought a different game.
So are you done with Samus Returns?
No, I will go back to it sometime. Yeah. Just not right now. So Breath of the Wild, I'll talk about that because I don't have a whole lot to say about that either. Basically, I have fixed my Sheikah Slate, and I also captured and tamed Bunyan, my majestic steed.
Yeah.
I was waiting for you to say majestic bunny.
No, I don't think you can catch bunnies in this game. I have not been able to. If so, they probably turn into a steak. But anyway, I've gathered that my general grumping about this game is basically due to how expansive it is combined with the limitations at the start of the game. Uh-huh. So you don't, those limitations are there so you don't get overwhelmed. And what happened is that I wasn't overwhelmed. I was underwhelmed, and starting off on the wrong foot like that, you know, where I'm just like bored out of my skull, doesn't make me feel eager to press on and get right on to the rest of the game. I listened to I'm not even done with it yet, most of the WAF ep about it. And I had to take breaks because of all the damn gushing about the game. And I was just like, I can't take it. You
know? So, I'm not going to modulate my opinion just because I know you don't like the game.
No. You're entitled. You are 100% entitled to your opinion. But I was just like, I am not on board with this. So anyway, I haven't finished the game. So I want to go back and keep playing it. So obviously it's not that bad, you know, but anyway, I was just like, some of the stuff you guys were bragging on or whatever, I don't even remember what, so don't ask, I don't remember, was stuff that I was just like, no, that's not a thing. No, that's bad. I don't like that, you know? So anyway, I did learn something valuable from listening to that, though, namely that if you take photos with your slate of whatever you need or want, you can set the homing device to tell you when you're close to one. And that's cool, and that's good to know, so yay.
Yeah,
but I guess,
we did our job.
I guess yeah, so I guess it's because you guys, and by that I mean Cole and Ben, were talking, you know, telling me that I needed to keep playing. I guess subconsciously, even though I wasn't intentionally setting the game down for that reason, I set it down. So I was bored with Samus Returns and Breath of the Wild. I just wanted a break from them. And so and usually I get to a point, and I think you guys have seen this, where like, I will get to a point somewhere around, you know, 15 or 20 hours into a game where I just get bored and I just want a break. Right. And, you know, like I hit that point with Breath of the Wild and I just wanted a break. So instead of playing something in my backlog or whatever, I ended up buying some third thing I wasn't even intending to purchase and I didn't even know anything about. And so, I bought it because Nintendo sent me a 30% off coupon from selected titles. And in looking through the list, this is the one that I opted for after consulting the Slack.
What is it?
And it is Fire Emblem Awakening.
Yeah.
So this is a game that has a lot of 3D cel-shaded cutscenes, which are all pretty anime tropeful. So, yes, I made up a word. I've never played a Fire Emblem game ever, and so I had no idea that it was even an SRPG. I didn't even know. I had no idea what it was. I was just like, okay, well, whatever. When I was setting it all up, I had this issue with the audio right up front because it has an unintuitive menu navigation. Like, basically, I wanted to switch the audio to Japanese, but then, like, I wanted to have subtitles because although I know a decent amount of Japanese, I don't know enough to carry me through the entire game. I know there's going to be words I don't know. So I was like, I want subtitles. Mm-hmm. Well, you can switch the audio from the extras menu on the main screen. Although during the opening sequences, you know, I didn't need any of the subtitles, I knew eventually, you know, like I said, I'd need it. Turns out that I had to wait until after I finished the entire intro sequence and got to the overworld map. And then you have to go into the menu there and go to the options.
Oh, no. They have two different sets of settings options?
You have to toggle the subtitles on there. And I only sorted that out because of Phil Holmes. So thanks, Phil, for helping me figure that shit out. Because I was just like, what is this? There's not even subtitles? What is this? You know, because normally if you switch it to like Japanese and this is the English release of the game, it will put subtitles on for you automatically. Yeah. But no. And also I find that like if I close the app, if I close that game and then reopen it because, for example, one of my party members died and it's like they die and they don't come back if they die. Like I have to close it out and open it back up. When I do that, even if it says it's on Japanese voice, it'll switch back to English. So I have to go back in and change Japanese every time, like, you know, toggle it back and forth to fix it.
Yuck.
So that's kind of like an irritating little bug. But anyways, it's not that bad. So this is a game that is about shipping. It's a fucking dating sim. And you can marry people to each other by having them basically fight alongside each other in battle. And the princeling Crom, who's like, you know, the main dude, can be married off to you, the main character, Robin. If you are a female, you can pick whether your character is male or female and what they look like to a certain extent. There's like three options you can pick from. And anytime I hear Crom, it's spelled Chrom, but I think of Conan the Barbarian's God of War Crom.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'm just like, you know, like for a while there, every single time I saw or heard his name, I was just like screaming like Conan in my head. So I'm pretty sure that I actually like did it a couple of times. But anyway, yeah, so in the game, there is also, and this is just some random spoo before I start really talking about the mechanics and things. There is a Marth. Marth is like the super famous prince slash king from the original game. And there is a Marth in this game too. And it's supposed to take place 2,000 years after the original games or something like that. And I, at first, when I saw that this Marth was a female, I was like, this is Naruto Shiragane from like Persona 4. Look at this. Look at them. They look alike. It's Naruto. So
it's very similar.
Naruto has crossed time and space. But anyway, then I learned who she actually is, and I wasn't really all that far off. People who know the game will know what I mean by that. But anyway, I married Crom. I had my character marry Crom because at first he seemed like he was the hunk, but then he ended up derpy from his interactions with the main character, so he got progressively less cool, but I was already like married to him when I found it, like, or very, very close to it. I was like, fuck, you're stupid, I don't like you anymore. And meanwhile, see, so this is how it's already a soap opera. Then I started digging on Stahl, who's one of the knights that you get early in the game, and so like I couldn't get with him. So then I had Sully, who's a female knight that has a personality very similar to mine. I had them get married and stuff. And so basically that's essentially, if you might gather from my chit chat about this game, I haven't gotten to mechanics or talked about that at all, or like the storyline. It's just like the only thing that I'm talking about is the shipping shit, because that's the only thing that I'm tweeting about in this game. And more than anything else, that is what people seem most animated about and responsive to, is who I'm shipping. That's the decision. Who are you shipping? You know, and so like I even have people say, yeah, I like that game, but I get too caught up in who I'm shipping. And so like whatever. And so that's what it's all about. Because, you know, you, like I said, you can basically when they get married, they have kids, and you can recruit the kids into your army later, and they get stats from their parents. So it actually has a gameplay mechanic to it where you can influence the characters that you have later in the game by who you marry off in the beginning.
So it is a game about eugenics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is an SRPG, as I said, and it is similar to a Shining Force in that you have a team of a basic, you know, specific number of characters per battle, and your extra characters are basically sitting on the bench waiting. And the classes so far are also pretty comparable to Shining Force. Like, the Shining Force has centaurs, and they have mounted knights in this game who function the same. They wield similar weapons, have similar strengths and weaknesses, etc. And also, like Shining Force, at level 10, you can promote your party members to an upgraded class. But this game also has the ability to change their class to a new one. They have usually a couple of options, like one character who is a troubadour, a healer, a mounted healer, can switch to a war cleric who has an axe, or turn into some other kind of, like, you know, healing type person that just heals. So you use master seals and second seals, which are items that you have to buy from shops in order to do that. And the characters retain skills that they learn as they level up once they switch classes. So you right. can, you know, do a little bit of like legacy work with that.
Do they still have the rock, paper, scissors system with the different kinds of units, the melee, ranged, and mounted?
I don't know what rock, paper, scissors you're referring to, but
the one Fire Emblem game that I've played is the one for Game Boy Advance. Is they had a rock, paper, scissors system for the advantage that one would have over the other. So like, cavalry would be strong against melee, but weak against range. I'm not sure if that's what it was, but that was a good way to like make very like broad rule of thumb decisions on the battlefield.
Oh yeah. And that's a thing. Like, if you have a Pegasus Knight and they are going up against an archer, they will die in one hit.
Yeah.
So yeah. And that, like, that's lame. I mean, like, having a stronger attack to where it almost kills them is cool, but like, one shot killing them when you, like, the classic mode for this game is like death, you know, when they die, that's the end. They don't come back. Like, that's lame.
Wait, they give you the ability so, to turn that off?
Yes. And this one, you can be a casual and you can have them come back at the end of the game after the end of the battle or whatever.
That was the only thing that made me feel anything when I played that.
Well,
yeah,
you that was no the feelings. Only thing that made me feel.
Yeah, you have no feelings anymore, Cole. Now you have to get into the shipping or die.
So. Never. No. Continue.
Yeah. So speaking of shipping, there's a relationship meter for every character related to, you know, the other characters in your team. So you can have like no support tier whatsoever, which basically means you have a very, very low buff that is conferred when you fight next to this person, or a C, B, or A, and then finally an S tier as you move up through the ranks. And depending upon how strong your bond is with each, you know, pairing, it means, of course, more bonuses in battle. And S rank is basically the characters that you can ship, you know, like these are the ones you can marry. So in this game, that means it's only for select members of the opposite gender. So mm-hmm. like, you can't ship male Robin, the main character, with Crom, but you can ship female Robin with Crom and things like that, because they got to have some babies. Right. That's all this game is about, is those eugenics. So whatever. And on the battlefield, you can have them fight side by side and each get a turn, or you can pair the two characters up. And when you pair them, they take up one tile on the map. They move at the rate of whichever character is in front. And they have one action per turn rather than two separate actions, but they have extra buffs. And then, like, sometimes the second character will come in and finish off, you know, whatever the first character, you know, can't do, like, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So, and this is useful if you have an underleveled or particularly squishy character. Like, you know, I would oftentimes pair up my healer, who can't do any damage at all, with one of the knights, because the knights can one shot most of the enemies without any extra combat buffs. And so they also serve as a shield for the squishies. So, like, you know, whoever's up front not only attacks, but also takes damage. So, like, if I've got the healer paired up with, you know, a knight, and then, you know, the boss comes over and, you know, lays a smackdown or tries to, the only person who's going to get injured is the knight, and the knight can take it. So they're just like, whatever, you know.
Sometimes he attack, she protect.
Yeah, that kind of a thing. So, yeah. Another factor in this game is weapon durability, and everything has a finite amount of uses, at which point you're kind of SOL, and so you're kind of constantly cycling through weapons. And I don't see that this benefits the gameplay in any real way, so it must be like a legacy factor. But I'm not really sure because I haven't played any other Fire Emblems. Was that a thing in the one that you played, Cole?
I can't recall.
Okay. Well, it's funny because I know that you were talking about that with Breath of the Wild and that being like a thing that everybody was all pissed off about with that game. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny because that game, like, it does not bother me at all.
Like that is so transient. Like, you're always picking up and finding new stuff. Like, it sounds like if that is in a strategy RPG, like, that can situationally really bone you. Like, it is more make or break than in Zelda, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, so basically, I also want to talk about how it differs from Shining Force, because I'm a Shining fan. So, so Shining Force is old as hell, and it came out very close to the time that the first Fire Emblem came out. I want to say Fire Emblem was like a year before Shining Force. So, like, they were in development very close, you know, closely. And they probably influenced each other, borrowed from each other a lot. But anyway, I don't know because I didn't play them. Like, I played Shining Force back in the day. I did not play Fire Emblem, so I have no idea. But to compare even Shining Force 3, which came out in 97, to this game is totally unfair because Camelot, the studio who made it, stopped producing Shining games after 3, and it's been other developers who have screwed up the series ever since. There was, like, Shining Force Neo and Shining Tears, and they suck, so don't play them. But in Shining Force 3, there's relationships that are formed on the battlefield by characters that heal each other or follow up on each other's attacks, etc., just like in this game. But that didn't lead to any special conversations outside of battles or marriages or anything. Right. And there was romance, but it was all like pre-selected certain characters, you know, that were either already married or entering into a relationship or flirting with each other or something like, you know, that was just a thing, you know, pre-made thing going on. And in Shining Force CD, you play the offspring of characters who got married from, you know, the second game, I want to say.
But there's no there's no transfer between those.
There's no like, you know, you know, okay, whatever you did in Shining Force 2 now carries over. There wasn't any of that.
Right.
Shining Force also had promotion beginning at level 10, but there was not a reclassing option the way that there is in Fire Emblem. There was also not weapon durability. So basically, Shining Force 3 is a bit less complex insofar as like the systems are concerned, but it's also 15 years older than Fire Emblem Awakening.
Right.
And if Camelot were to make a Shining game these days, I'm sure the systems would be far more involved. But that said, Shining Force 3 did have a super intricate story with a lot of moving parts, so much so that it had 3 scenarios which were released as separate games that were simultaneously standalone and part of the larger narrative with different Shining Forces that met up and helped each other at different intervals in the game, culminating in like this big, massive, multi-map battle with all 3 Shining Forces on the you know, screen at once. So I mean, like, it was a big deal. But anyway, like, basically I'd love to see a new Shining Force so long as it's made by Camelot and the original devs, but that's never gonna happen. So yeah, like, I'm playing,
they're busy like, down in the Mario Golf mines.
Yeah, I know, they're playing Mario Golf, they're doing Mario Golf and Mario Tennis, and like the only other thing they did was like Golden Sun or something. Ugh. And whatever. So anyway, like, oh, how the mighty have fallen.
How the mighty have found a lucrative deal with Nintendo.
Right. Pretty much. So the pairing and stuff is a fun mechanic, but I find that it can be pretty OP when the battles, you know, to where the battles aren't difficult. Like, I can pair up 2 knights and they'll just slaughter. Like, literally anybody attacks them, they die. So, like, I can just take this knight and I can just, you know, a pair of knights and put them out in the front, and then just everybody attacks them because that's the only, you know, player near them, and they all die. And then, like, the whole field is wiped and, like, my character has taken 2 damage or something. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, it is, yeah, it's ridiculous. It's OP. So, even, like, I'm playing on normal classic mode, meaning that, you know, like, it's the regular difficulty. It's not the hard mode or anything. But if the characters die, they die forever. Mm-hmm. So I have had to restart battles because of like the archer slash Pegasus Knight thing. Like if I didn't realize there was an archer there within range and then they were, and then they killed my Pegasus Knight or something, yeah, you know, that kind
of
thing.
If they die in the game, they die in the game.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I can see how this game would be like a stats manager or min-maxer's most exciting thing to play, but I'm not one of those, so I'm not really interested in doing that kind of a thing.
So, I mean, like, you have your tongue pretty much in your cheek when you talk about the relationship management stuff. Is that something that actually, like, intrigues you? Like, do they handle it well enough to make you invested in this, or is it more like you're breeding Pokemon and these Pokemon have souls and write songs?
I'll talk about it. Okay. yeah, there's the weird thing about this game is that even though it's a strategy RPG, there's actually optional random battles. You can elect to participate in them or not at your discretion, but really I kind of find that you often have new party members that need to level up or build support tiers, and or you need money to buy like stuff, you know? Yeah. So
like with Final Fantasy Tactics.
Yeah. And then like there's also a special arena where you can play non-story DLC maps, and there are tons of these, so many of these that like I poke my head in there and I'm like, fuck that noise, because like that's probably $100 worth of like, you know, maps for this game.
It's ridiculous. like Awakening, I think it released alongside like I might be thinking of the one after this, but like there was a situation where they put out three Fire Emblem games at the same time, and then also had DLC that totaled far more than even the individual purchases.
Yeah, and that's kind of what it's looking like with this. But there's apparently, and this is David Petroco tipped me off to this. There is, I think it was him. Sorry if I'm not crediting the right person again. Anyway, he tipped me off about there is a set of maps, one of which is like basically an XP grind dungeon, and the other one is a money grind dungeon. So, you know, they're repeatable maps that you can do that, you know, are lucrative for those particular aspects if you need. So like there are some dungeons specifically to help you with that if you need that to get a character up to speed or if you need money. So right. I did buy those two maps just in case I need them, but so far I've been all right. Mm-hmm. Anyway, by the way, I've also put like 15 hours into this game, so I'm getting to the point where I'm starting to get tired.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I might back to Breath of the Wild, or who knows what I'll do next. But anyway, we'll see. I don't know, I might keep playing. So the relationship stuff. So several of the S-rank marriage tier of the sport conversations are just really janky. The jump from A-rank, which is like broskies, to S-rank sometimes is really nonsensical. Sometimes it makes a lot of sense, and then other times it's just not. Like the characters Gaius and Sumia, for example. Gaius is a thief that's basically obsessed with sweets, and he wants to get some honey. And so throughout the first three support conversations with Sumia, he's tracking bees to their hive and, you know, trying to get the hive of honey so he can, you know, or hive so he can get the honey out of it. And Sumia ends up causing him basically to get stung the fuck up, and somehow we go from that to, will you marry me? And I'm like, what? How do you somehow fall in love with this chick right now?
This,
you
know, is like, not whatever. Track. Yeah.
This is stupid. And then there's another thing. Vike and Muriel are just as bad. Vike is basically a meathead, and he's just like a dumb fighter guy. And then Muriel is an egghead. Yeah, so she's studying his combat skills in order to analyze how he can basically be, you know, so slow and yet skilled without even thinking about it. Like he goes from, you know, like, what are you talking about, and not knowing anything that she's saying at all to falling in love with you, marry me, and it just makes no sense whatsoever. And then she's like, I can now analyze love, how convenient. It's like,
what's this? So it makes about as much sense as real love.
I guess, but also at the same time it doesn't jive, because like the way that it transfers from C to B to A makes sense. It's a conveniently segmented story that makes sense. It's like a little vignette of these characters' interactions that's ongoing. But like a lot of times that last little part where it jumps from that to love just doesn't make any sense. So I don't know. But some of the characters are pretty endearing, but I'm just not finding any of the battles particularly memorable.
Right.
Cut scenes range from being okay to being really good, so that's nice. Like the storyline stuff that they're doing, I mean, like it's predictable JRPG storyline, but I mean, they're handling it and presenting it well. I'm liking the game overall, and the number of things that I have to grump about is fairly small. Mm-hmm. So I'm confident that I'll play the rest of it and like it, but I'll likely set it down before I finish it.
Yeah.
Set it down, come back to it again later, because I get tired of too much of the same thing, and the battles are not engaging enough and triggering, oh man, I have to figure out how to deal with the section. No, like with the pairing thing, it's really easy to get through the battles right now for me. So, I don't know. So yeah, it's a good game. I'm enjoying it. There are mild things to grump about. It's all about shipping, really, more than anything. I have to say that I am a little disappointed that it feels like they have more energy in the dating sim part than they do. Like, as much as some of it's janky, it still feels like they put more effort into that than to actually making the battles interesting and cool.
Yeah.
Like, I've gone through 15 hours worth of the gameplay, and I can't really remember, much of the scenarios of the battles because they weren't very difficult or anything. And I don't know if that's because they built in all this pairing and partnering and support stuff in there to the point that it's just too easy. Or if it's, they just couldn't scale it properly for that kind of mechanic, or what the deal is.
Like, there's a conservation of complexity that needs to happen, right? Like, if there is so much variation that can happen based on your pairs and based on the way you kind of manage your party, like, there isn't a lot of room for them to say, hey, this is these stages are going to have gimmicks. Like, here's a timed one, and here's one where you can't use magic, and here's all that. So it makes sense in a way, but like that sounds less interesting to me than like a strategy game that has like a huge variation in the missions, right?
Well, and here's the thing, like there is a one battle in particular that I remember, and not because it's very good in Fire Emblem Awakening, but because it's so much better in Shunning Force 3. There is a section where you have to rescue some villagers, and I think it's like one of the optional battles on the map that you can unlock at some point. And basically some villagers are being attacked by, I don't know, Risen or something, which are these undead people showing up for whatever reason. And because the evil bad is coming, I guess, I don't know. And so you have to rescue them, and there's a similar kind of situation in Shining Force 3, except in Shining Force 3, you're in a train station, train depot, and there are two trains coming from opposite directions that block your way, to the refugees. Huh. The refugees are very limited. They can't attack, and they are like, you have to have one person, probably a centaur, go as fast as they can to make it across the tracks in time before they get cut off, so that, he can try to, because I think they're the only centaur you've got at that time is male, so that he can like protect the villagers as best he can and try to save them from, the enemies until the trains have cleared the path, and then the rest of your party can come and back him up. And so like I died in that battle so many times because it was really difficult to get the movement just right to get him to save those people. And then of course you get a bonus there's like some reason why it's of course better to get all of them versus just a couple of the people to survive. And of course fail state is they all die,
right?
And they had something like that in this game, but it was like they're across the bridge from you, and like that's not a big deal because you have Pegasus Knights that can fly over there. So what? You pair up one of the hardcore knights with a Pegasus Knight, drop them on the other side of the bridge, and then, what's the big deal? There's not even a deal. It's not even difficult. So, it was much more interestingly implemented in this 1997 game, back in the day that nobody played but me and, unfortunately, I'm not seeing the interesting, cool battles like that. And then also in Shining Force 3, they would have it where sometimes on certain maps, you would have like a ruin or a temple or something that has treasures. And then like thieves would go in there and, you know, steal all the treasures, and you had to throw some really, really fast people into that temple off of your main map, basically pull all, you know, your stronger, your fast people off the map and put them in there so they can, you know, go hunt down the thieves and get some of the goods before, you know, the thieves left the temple, because once they're off the map, the ruin collapses and then like you get thrown back onto the main screen. So you're juggling multiple fields of battle at the same time. And, you know, you have like movement rate and attacks and stuff are very critical for those maps. So, I mean, like it adds elements of strategy that I'm not seeing in Fire Emblem, but it's weird because like I would think, you know, especially since they were being developed very closely together for so long, that, you know, this series by now would have something like that.
That there would be a state of the art.
Yeah, because like it's my impression that the harder difficulty modes are really just, you know, increasing, you know, the enemy level or something versus, you know, actually adding new tactical stuff that you have to do.
It's like moving numbers around.
Yeah. And that's unfortunate. So hopefully there's something cool ahead for that, but it feels like most of the energy is in the shipping. So
yeah. And that's something that's kept me away. Like people glow about the series, but for me, I just that depends on me getting invested in or caring about JRPG writing. And you know, it's happened. Like it's a genre that I like, but man, it's hard for me to read text.
Well, and apparently this is like, I might be wrong. I might be misremembering. I think somebody told me this is like the first game in the series, or at least one of the only games in the series where you can ship a couple of characters and then actually influence, you know, later characters that you can recruit via those eugenics. So, you know, that is kind of unique to this game, is my understanding, that it's not a thing in all the other games. So,
right.
Yeah. So I don't know. So like maybe another Fire Emblem that isn't pushing that so much would be a better fit, I guess, is what I'm trying to suggest.
Yeah.
So.
Well,
that's
yeah,
it.
I don't know that I have any other questions about it. You've been very thorough. I just, I was excited to see you get into that because I know that you like fantasy strategy RPGs, but it might just be the case that you just like Shining Force.
Well, you know, like I played, you know, and you know, as much as I complain about stuff, I was thinking about this the other day. I'm like, you know, I complain about games because I'm just honest with how I feel about them at the time. And I'm not reserved from saying this is how I feel about it right now. Uh-huh. You know, like, I know that might change, and it oftentimes does. I end up liking almost every single game that I play.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare that I actually dislike a game. So, you know, like even if I'm grumping about it, like, you know, I probably am going to end up liking it. So, yeah. You know, I set down Jeanne d'Arc, but it's kind of playing this kind of makes me want to go back and fiddle with that a little bit more and see, you know, how the mechanics work in that game. Of course, the story in that one is so much more ridiculous even than this one that I'm just like, I don't know if I can take the magical, you know, super henshin. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's also like riffing on history too. Like
it was like the four heroes with their magical armlets that transform them into, you know, whatever the hell. And I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know. We'll see. So
yeah. Cool. Well, is that all?
That is all.
Yeah. Ben, I'm curious what you've been playing.
All right, I'm going to try a double segue with what I've been playing.
Whoa,
so the first game is another Japanese tactical game. It's for the Switch. It's Mario Rabbids.
What?
Yeah, I picked it up because I have a couple of flights coming up, and I have South by Southwest and Standing in Lines coming up, so I figured I needed a game that I could play for a couple hours at a time. I kind of went into it blind. I'd heard just general reviews of it being fun. I've only played it for about an hour or two. So I haven't really gotten deep into the mechanics. It's I can say that there's a long intro cutscene. I can say that the graphics look really good. They look like as pretty as Super Mario Odyssey, which is a high compliment. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, gushing with color in every frame. I'm not as familiar with the Rabbid series, so that part is something that
minions
is probably
minions.
Yeah, that's essentially what they seem like. Yeah, like from yeah. But a lot of them seem to be kind of like going over my head, I guess. I don't know. I'm finding out more about them. Like, they build things, they fix things, I guess. But yeah. So anyway, there's a lot of kind of character development with those characters kind of being smattered into the Mario universe. And there's only been like maybe a handful of like XCOM-ish battles that I've played so far. So I've only played like maybe like 5 or 6 of those. The rest of it is kind of like similar to like maybe like the new Super Mario Brothers, where you're kind of like walking around this like colorful map to get to the next destination.
Oh yeah, it sounds like Super Mario 3D World.
Yeah, and yeah, but the actual like playing of the levels, like the XCOM aspects, it definitely feels like a kid's version of XCOM, which I don't think I would have ever thought of before. Like a like a non-stressful version of XCOM. so that's a completely new experience. I think right now it's like, it's very simple. Everybody has guns. I think there's variation in the type of guns you can get, and you can buy different guns, but you have to like find plans for them. That requires like going to different corners of the map to like find Easter eggs. The one difference between like this and like XCOM, or the most noticeable one, is they have a difference in how you do movement. They have this ability where if you can move to an enemy, you can basically like move and hit them and then move somewhere else, like behind cover. Oh. It's like you get a free hit on them.
So it's like almost like the opposite of attacks of opportunity in like third edition Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's kind of like a weird mechanic. I especially coming off of Into the Breach, like I don't, there's not a balance to it, you know, like you're not, it doesn't cost you anything. It's just so like
for two games in the same genre, like I don't think two of them could be any more different than these two.
So that's what it's definitely feels like, a light version and a very friendly version, or it's like, here, get a free attack if you yeah. like, you know, like we're not gonna crush your spirit, we're not gonna kill your characters. And then the other movement mechanic is you can jump off of an ally. So you can select their square, and then it allows you to kind of jump in a certain like circle range around them. So that can kind of get you to other places that you might not be able to get to, I guess. And so that's a little bit more of an interesting mechanic, because then there's like a little bit of order of operations of like, okay, I can't move this person because I need someone to jump off of him first and then take a shot over here. It's been pretty interesting so far, but I've only played like an hour or two of it, so I need to keep playing that before I can actually say anything interesting about it.
Yeah, I'm curious how it's going to bounce off of you. So I've heard a lot about the way the kind of the change to 2-hit percentage affects this and works with
yeah.
it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just that they kind of quantize it or simplify it, where it's like, well, like 100%, 50%, 25% or something like that.
Yeah, I think so far I've seen 0, 50, and 100%.
Yeah, yeah. That seems smart to me.
Gotcha. They're not like breaking down and doing like 91%, 98% or something like that.
Yeah, just because like the difference between 90 and 95% on a 2-hit doesn't actually make me make a different decision.
Uh-huh.
You know, like if that's, it just makes me feel bad when I miss on a 95, but hit on a 90, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
And I want to place a bug in your ear about that, because I want to hear how that rolls for you, you know?
Yeah. I think so far in general, it hasn't been hard to like flank people. So like even somebody at a 0 or 50% isn't like a big deal yet. I hope the game gets difficult, but I don't know if maybe I need to look for a different mode or something like that, or change the difficulty, or I don't know.
If I was a betting man, I would say that the entire main campaign is going to be really easy, but like every other Nintendo game, they will have a post game mode that is like, here's where the grown up difficulty starts.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Ben, can you explain to me the Rabbid versions of the Mario characters? Why? What is this? What is this?
So for people who are not in our backstage Slack, which I mean, everybody except David, like Jolly just shared an image that is the rabid version of Peach. The notable thing being that she has no pants.
Yeah, I'm like looking through just images on Google of all of the different, you know, Mario characters as rabbits. What is this?
So the premise is that there is a character that you don't know much about, but they've come up with this machine that can basically combine any two items together, and it'll kind of create some sort of mesh of the two of them, or some sort of like, combination of the two of them. So like you can do, I think the example they show early on is like a light bulb and a flower. And then when it does that, there's like literal bulbs in the flower, which is kind of like a cute pun that I didn't think about until now. And so the premise of the game is that this gun kind of gets unleashed on the world. And so it combines a bunch of things. So basically there's a lot of rabbits being combined with some random object. One of that includes is like a rabbit and Princess Peach getting combined into a half peach, half rabbit thing, or a Luigi and a rabbit being combined into a half rabbit, half Luigi thing. So you get a lot of like weird characters. It's not, who's the director who did The Fly?
It's not Cronenberg. Yeah.
It's like Cutenberg, I guess. Like, it's happy combinations of two things instead of very strange and scary, grotesque versions of two things. Yeah. So
I would still qualify this as being strange and scary looking. Like, I'm not down with these. I'm not. So, like, are they on your side or are they your enemies? Or are there lots of them? Like, what's the deal?
It depends on what they're combined with. So the ones that were combined with, like, Luigi and Peach, they're your friends and they're your party members. But, like, some of them were combined with, like, I think, like, a dust mop. And so one of them was combined with, like, a flower or something. And for some reason, those are the bad ones.
The person in charge of coming up this was just looking around the office.
Frantically thinking of things. Yeah.
Oh God, the deadline's tonight.
Oh yeah. Boy.
The happy like Mario narrative is like, so after you fight these, there's like a dimension where all these things exist. So after you kill these things with your guns in the dimension, which is very un Mario.
Yeah.
They're just hanging out in the Mario world and they're happy. You know what I mean? So it's like,
sure.
They try and like make it like Tron, I guess, where it's, I don't know. It's the train. Yeah. You're only, yeah, whatever. I don't know.
All rabbits go to the Mushroom Kingdom instead of all dogs go to heaven.
There's also some fun combinations too. Like you talk to a flower that has sunglasses on and like has a sweet like baseline instrument that will play whenever he's talking and his text comes up.
Awesome.
I mean, there's fun combinations they do with that. So from that perspective, it's similar to what they do in Super Mario Odyssey, where it's like, all right, how are we going to turn this random thing into Mario? It's like, how can we turn these random two things into one thing? So there's kind of like some happy creativity going on there.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, it looks like a very bright and happy looking game. And so, you know, it's got that steez going for it. But I just saw this and I'm like, what the hell is this? Can someone explain this to me?
Yeah. The rabid Princess Peach is kind of like a puffy princess or a lumpy princess from Adventure Time.
Oh, yeah.
She takes a lot of selfies of herself. And I don't know. I don't know why that is, but whatever.
Rabid, why does anyone take selfies?
Rabid Peach would be more acceptable to me if she didn't have the like pink bear patch, like the belly patch that the rabbits have sticking out from underneath her, the hem of her dress. So she's wearing a t-shirt version of Princess Peach's dress. And there are no pants because I guess that's how you communicate that it's a rabbit. And there's just like this general pink hairless area that's down and approaching the crotch that is, you know, kind of like a Zdzislaw Beksinski-esque kind of like nightmare erotics like insinuation.
That might be a little far. I don't know.
That's why I said it, Ben. Have you met me? Continue. I'm sorry.
Oh no. I don't know. I don't have a whole lot to say because like most of what I've seen so far has just been like cutscenes and like, I don't know, like walking through the environment and stuff. They do kind of have like a Metroid element where When you walk through like the map, there's like a couple of areas that are blocked off with things that you don't really know how to operate yet. And so that's kind of cool, because I imagine I'll probably go through a second time and try and go through everything and look through everything.
Nice.
So my hope is that the combat gets more interesting and more like complex, but we shall see.
Yeah, that's kind of like where I'm sitting with Fire Emblem Awakening, too. I'm like, we'll see what happens with it, with the combat. So,
Any other questions about Mario and Rabbids?
No, I want to hear more about it later.
Okay, cool, cool. And then the second part of my two-way segue is I have continued playing Into the Breach. I beat it on the two-planet difficulty. So if you like beat the first two planets and then you rush the boss battle at the end of that. I don't know if this game has as long of legs as like FTL. I don't know if I'll go back to it a whole bunch. I haven't played it like for the last like half a week or so. Not to say it's like not like good, I guess. Like it's still like interesting gameplay and stuff, but I don't know. I might go back and play more of it later, but for some reason, like I feel pretty good with it for now, I guess.
Yeah.
Have you done any of the custom or random squads?
I tried one of the more advanced squads, which was like an ice squad. And so the moveset's like completely different. And so I played it for a couple of rounds, but then I kind of put a pause on it because this was before I had beaten the game. So I wanted to actually like commit to the one squad that I started with and actually like beat the game with them, you know, and kind of like master their moveset. I might go back and try like another squad maybe, but I might do a different one than the ice squad. I think mostly because one of the ice squads, I think what they do is they fire an ice shot that freezes one target, but also freezes themselves. Which I didn't see the benefit until I thought about now, is they can be targeted by to be hit by someone, and that would be fine. Like if they fire at someone else, then they would turn to ice and then they would just break the ice barrier and then they'd be good to go.
If
nobody hits them, then they're stuck there and they can't really do anything.
Or another use is you could push someone into them and they essentially now become a one damage target for the enemy. That's been the not to butt in, but that's been the cycle of the game for me, is unlock a new squad, do a run with it and be like, this is worthless. This is complete shit. I can't work with this.
Yeah.
And then upon the second run, you're like, oh, I understand how this can be good. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a loop that I'm just going through over and over again.
Gotcha. Yeah. I might go down that path then as well. Have you been in the game? Have you gotten to third or fourth land?
Yeah. So I've had a 2-island victory and a 4-island victory.
Oh, nice.
And I'm cruising my way to another 4-island victory, because the new squad that I'm playing with, which is all about smoke, I've kind of grokked it and now I'm all set. Like the battles are easy. So I would recommend to you either the fire-based squad or the smoke-based squad.
Okay.
Those, in my experience, have been the most satisfying.
Okay.
Although, warning, if you play the fire-based squad, they have a passive that lets you stand in fire without taking damage. And then every squad that you play from that point on that doesn't have that passive is just going to annoy the hell out of you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. What else have you done with the game, Dennis, over the last week or so?
Yeah, I have not gotten to the random squad point. I want to unlock every single squad before I start doing random.
Okay.
So I've done the base one, I've done the fire one, I've done the smoke one. I did it's like a laser squad.
Okay.
And that one I'm still at this is shit, I can't work with this stage with. But my experience with everything else that I've tried is that that's always the first impression. And then as you actually figure out how to play differently around it, it gets much, much better.
Yeah.
Let's see. Other than that, I think you kind of learn the general heuristic for the game. Like, it's kind of like if you're on the offensive line in football, like, you know, one of your guys has to take two to be really effective. Like, you know, if you want to figure out a way that one of your guys can take care of two attackers, and that means you know you're doing something right. And inversely, if you ever find yourself dedicating two attacks to a single enemy in one turn, it probably means that you're missing something else. Mm-hmm. And for as finite and clearly communicated as the everything in this game is, like all the information in a turn, I routinely just forget about something. Like, aha, I managed to clear off all the enemies, but oh, wait, there was that bomb in the back lines, and now that's going to go off.
Gosh.
And I've already used all my moves, so crap, you know, like, or, you know, you forget that, oh, well, my plan to go to this spot is actually, it's a smoked spot, and I can't attack from there.
Yeah.
And that ruins everything that I just spent 15 minutes thinking about. So it is, you know, what they've done in terms of communicating a ton of information in a very concise and visual way is monumental, and it's still really easy to miss things.
Yeah. There's a lot of like order of operation problems, or like I can move this guy, but the only way I move him would be if he bumps into where I move to move him.
Yes.
So he won't actually move. So frustrating. Yeah.
Yeah. It is an interesting game that will, I think it was Griffin McElroy I saw on Twitter was talking about having Into the Breach dreams.
Yep.
It is that exact kind of Tetris of a game.
Yeah.
Tetris type game that
they specifically invoke that on a recent episode of The Besties where they talk about it. Like they say, yeah, this
is totally
a Tetris effect game.
It just, yeah, your mind latches onto those patterns and just runs them and runs them and runs them. While you sleep. So I think I'm continuing my momentum with it a little bit better than it sounds like you have been. Mm-hmm. And feel like I'm still seeing very new things. It is a little obtuse, like how you unlock new squads. Like you get a rating for each time you go through, depending on how many islands you play. And then there are also just random challenges for each squad. And I always forget to look at the challenges. And even so, like the game doesn't really give you that much margin to go after secondary objectives, or I guess tertiary objectives at that point. So it just, it feels like unlocking tokens to unlock new squads is a bit of a crapshoot. So I'm hoping that picks up maybe as I get more advanced squads or something like that. But overall, I'm still enjoying it.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Ben, I didn't mean to jump in on your.
No, it was intended to be a segue.
Good. So you don't have anything else to talk about?
I do, but I want the segue to be a segue. So,
and also the episode's running a little long. So
mm-hmm. Yeah. I can go through my other stuff fairly quick, and then Ben, I can either throw back to you or
no, you're good. I'm good for this week.
Cool.
What do you got?
So I've, in addition to Into the Breach, I have started playing Kingdom of Loathing again.
Oh, wow. Nice.
I'm trying to spend less time on Twitter, and I still want to have something, though, like in my I need 5 minutes to just derp around tab during mm-hmm. work, and Kingdom of Loathing fills that slot nicely.
Yeah.
So, you know, David has talked about it on the show before. I've played it before a fair amount, but just rolled up a new character. Because I couldn't remember my old, you know, name and password. And that actually had a great effect of, you know, I the last time I touched this game was easily 5 years ago.
Right.
Which means I was at the same time, like, genuinely surprised and delighted by all the puns and jokes and stuff in the game and puzzles in the game. But it also had that, like, pleasant ring of familiarity to it.
Oh, yeah.
Where just like, you know, so it's like, I didn't know anything that was going to hit in advance. I'm still, you know, puzzling out the puzzles. Mm-hmm. Haven't had to consult a fact yet. But you know, it's just like, oh, that's right. You know, and you can combine two bum cheeks to make an ass hat. And that, you know, is a wearable item.
Yep.
And just, you know, fun, dumb, just there's such a good heart behind the game.
Yeah.
And that's the only way I know how to say it. It's just, it's got a good heart, and it's fun to be around someone or something that has a good heart. And that's what Kingdom of Loathing is. It has definitely piqued my interest, you know, in addition to all the discussion on this show, in playing West of Loathing.
Oh, dude, hop on that as soon as you can.
Yes, yeah. I've got, there's so many games that I want to play.
I know,
right now.
I understand that, like, I understand how me saying, hey, jump on that as soon as you can comes across. But, like, if you like that aesthetic, it will be, like, your face will hurt.
Yes. Oh, for sure. So that's been a lot of fun. I'm starting to get to the point where it's less consistent progression every single second and more puzzling out things. So it's slowed down a little bit. I also didn't realize when you start the game, you get 200 adventures. And that's the currency that determines how many moves you can make in a day. And I just mistakenly thought you got 200 adventures every day versus you actually get about like 30 or 40, I think. And so I went to the odd jobs board, which was rewarding. You know, you could spend 10 adventures at a time and get an insane amount of experience points and everything. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I only have so much time to play this at work. So I'll just all the extra adventures I'll dump into this jobs board. Yeah, you only, like I said, I had 200. I spent probably, you know, 180 of those on the jobs board. And then came back the next day with like 20 adventures and just absolutely overleveled for everything. So that could be the other reason that my progress in the game is slowing down, is I'm finally getting to the point where I'm actually like appropriately leveled for the stuff I'm, you know, battles aren't just one hit kills every single time.
Right.
Yeah.
What kind of character did you roll up?
I am a, what is it, a disco thief?
Yeah.
A disco bandit. Excuse me. So level 7 disco bandit right now.
Cool.
And I'm fighting with a sack of doorknobs, which for whatever reason is a ranged weapon.
You can huck a sack of doorknobs.
Well, I like to imagine them pulling individual doorknobs out of the sack.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it's like a, you know, Mad Bomber style. The Mad Ding Dong Ditcher here. And, my familiar is a rat named Joyful Dwight.
Neat.
So.
Yeah.
So it's good times.
Cool. Well, for that for that commercial, I will reach out to Zach and get our invoice.
Yes, indeed. I also am ashamed to admit that it actually took me 4 tries to get through the literacy test to access chat. I was halfway distracted. I was at work, and so I'm like, just slam me in. No, that didn't work. Slam me in. No. And so they got me. There's the reason that it's there.
Such a good idea for them to do that.
Yeah. Yep. Yes, indeed. Yeah. So, yeah, that's me. I put some very, very limited time into Hand of Fate, which is like, and Jala, you've talked about this game.
Yeah, I have.
Deck building. Yeah, deck building solitaire game where, you know, encounters are actually played as adventure game, you know, brawler encounters. So far, the combat has been completely mindless. Like, you just mash on the attack button and there's not much to it, but then again I only played through the first 2 bosses, so I imagine it has to get more complicated from there. I love the kind of convention and setting, like, you know, you've sat down to gamble with your life and this mysterious kind of otherworldly fate person that's challenging you. So going back to that deal with the devil thing, right? Or the versus the devil here. Although I don't know if he's necessarily bad or good yet, I imagine there'll be more commentary on that to come.
Yeah.
And it's great flavor, but the VO just tends to run a little bit long for me. Yeah. So I imagine as I get familiar with all the different, you know, stingers and I start hearing stuff repeat, I'll be more comfortable just skipping through it.
Yeah.
But yeah. That's nice. That's about it.
Hand of Fate. Does that have a sequel?
It has a sequel, okay. Yes.
Yes, I am on the original.
Yeah. I need to get back to that. I never finished it. I was playing it, and then I set it down because when I was playing it, it was still on early access, I want to say. So need to get back to it.
I always mix up Hand of Fate with Rollers of the Realm.
Oh, sure. Also a very good RPG game.
Yeah. It is very similar. RPG game. Very similar X, but fantasy RPG kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. Is that all?
That's all for me.
Yeah. The good news is that I really haven't played much of anything. After several weeks of bringing something new and fresh to the show, I thought, that's too much. I'm raising expectations. So I'm just gonna whiff it this time. I finished streaming Alan Wake, and that's good because it kind of wore out its welcome a little bit. Still into the kind of the campy story. And like the dodge mechanics are real good. The DLC is not really great shakes, honestly. But those are up on youtube.tv or youtube.com/duckfeedtv. If you want to see those, as well. But otherwise it's just been, get this, Picross, on the Switch, Picross S, I guess is the actual name of it. And Pokemon Picross, which is, a Picross game, but it has a bunch of free to play bullshit on top. But I'm putting up with it because you are drawing pixel art Pokemon. So, yeah. So that's it. Any questions about the scant information that I've given you?
What are you streaming next?
I don't know. So I did Yuma Nikki over the weekends.
Dude, that was weird.
Yeah.
I couldn't get into it. I was, everybody else was like, this is such a good game. Yeah. And I'm just like, what are you doing? I don't even know what's happening right now. Okay. I don't know.
So even at the end, I'm not really able to, like, you know, a lot of people came in. So like, what's the goal of this game? And like, it doesn't really have a goal. You're just kind of walking around looking at the strange imagery, which is cool and fine. I did play something that I forgot to talk about. It's also not fun. streaming it, but you know, a game doesn't have to be fun. Like, it's trying to do something different. Like, they are, you know, this developer is using RPG Maker to like convey this otherworldly sense of, you know, just like the way their dreams work and stuff, which is, you know, which is a goal. But you know, streaming it probably wasn't the right decision to make, but I was happy to have finally experienced it. It's just hard for me to like recommend it, but it's free, so like maybe dip into it, but like be prepared for it to be aimless and off-putting.
Yeah,
this time it looks... you won't mind not getting back.
Well, it just looks to me kind of like the kind of thing where it's like, all right, I should do this myself, or I should just not.
Yeah.
Not, you know, yeah. Like I wouldn't recommend watching a Let's Play or something of it. Just go play it a little bit, and if you don't like what you're doing, then stop.
Yeah.
End. But like that's it.
It's free on Steam. There is a goal. I ended up like following a guide, which was good for the stream because I was able to like, you know which direction I was supposed to go in these large worlds that are mostly like looping and repeating and, you know, do not do a very good job of communicating what's there, you know. So go ahead.
So there is a goal?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you're going around trying to find kind of like these unique interactable things in each of these worlds, and you get something called effects. And by, you know, activating these effects, you change the nature of your character. Like, oh, like this one makes my head into a lamp, and so when I walk into a dark area, I can turn on the lamp and it will actually like light everything up, so I can navigate or see these patterns or stuff like that. Once you get all of those, you can get the ending, which I will refrain from commenting on.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So you are doing something, but like, you know, most of the joy is in walking around and seeing the bizarre imagery.
Which that's totally fine. But yeah. Like, it just, I was just like, what? Yeah. And again, I think it's more like one of those things where you need to just do it yourself to get whatever it is that you're going to get out of it.
Yeah.
Is what I would comment just from the, like, okay, granted I didn't hang out in there a long, long time, but I hung out in there for like 15, 20 minutes. And then I was like, okay, I don't get it. I'm going to go do something else for a while. And then I pop back in and I'm like, okay, I'm still not getting it. Yeah. So yeah,
it's not a good game to stream. And I was frustrated because everybody would come in and say, oh, what's this? What's the goal? What are you trying to do? And it's like, no, I'm just walking around and seeing what's here. And that wasn't enough. It wasn't enough for you jackals.
You got a problem.
So I'm going to do something a little bit more directed next time. I honestly haven't decided, Ben, but I'll have something. I'll have something for this weekend.
Qualifiers for this one, it can't be as action intense. I remember hearing you say that when you were doing Alan Wake, you didn't want to do one as action intense next time, and then also maybe not one that's like as open and, you know, whatever as Yuma Nikki. So
yep, I've got a handful of likely handful of likely candidates, so we'll figure it out.
Cool.
Well, do you all want to button it up?
I want to button.
Yes,
please.
Thank you everybody for listening to this episode of The Level. I believe it's 234. We'll be back next week. If you want to help us out, you can go leave us a rating or review on iTunes, and also spread the word, talk to your friends. We're about a month away from the Midwest Gaming Classic, going to be at that event in Milwaukee. If you want to come out, I believe tickets are still available. gonna be at a booth for Watch After Fireballs. We're sharing a booth with the Retronauts, and then we're doing a live show about the Game Boy Donkey Kong game, Donkey Kong 94. Yeah, so we'd love to see you. Love to have you come out, and please introduce yourself. If you have a screen name that you mostly go by and I've interacted with you under, please say, hi, my name is Daryl, and also you might know me as, you know, Smashulon 74.
Good old Smashulon. What a guy.
Yeah. So he's always there to cheer me up when I'm bummed out on Twitter. It's good. am I forgetting anything?
No.
Okay. I've been Cole Ross. You can watch me on Twitch at DuckFeed TV.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me at DFuria on Twitter, although I'm not there nearly as often anymore. So twitch.tv/greenlaser73 is the best place to go.
I'm Jolichon in places, and eventually I'll stream again, but I got to get past some of the stuff I got on my plate right now. Yeah. So someday you will see me in Cole's streams as Jolichon.
I am Ben Merkel at Merkelby on Cold Streams.
And stick around for some titles. Well, I got you here, and because this is by my desk and I feel like driving Jolly crazy.
Ooh.
Yeah, there we go. Just the Nintendo zapper,
like a
sound.
Stephen King about that, where like a waiter flips out because he hears a ringing sound or whatever.
Who has titles?
I'm too worn out from all the drama from, you know, the family and hospital and stuff to be reactive to that.
Yeah.
I only have two titles this week.
Okay.
Triple X Escape from Butcher Bay.
Okay.
And Have You Met Me?
that is a line from Community. So,
okay.
So I don't know. I don't know if I want to advance that
one.
Well,
at the same time, I don't watch anything ever. Uh-huh. And I have said that with great frequency recently when people were talking about min-maxing and firing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you fucking know who I am?
Google me. Yeah. Ben.
So, whatever.
I got two as well. Smashulon 74. And, well, you played it before. Fuck you.
All right. I've got two. No Mushrooms, No Deal. And then this one is by far my favorite. He Attack, She Protect. Protect spelled P-R-O-T-E-C-K.
Yes. Like the meme. Yeah. I have, If They Die in the Game, They Die in the Game. and then I have Cutenberg.
Ooh, that one's good too.
We've got a lot of titles that can't be titles, and then like two.
and then two. So I know it's something that I said, it's gauche for me to put it forward. I like If They Die in the Game, They Die in the Game, because it relates to the Fire Emblem.
Yeah.
I like it.
Are we good?
When was the last time we had a long title?
Yeah. It's good to mix them up. We had a couple of years of very short titles.
We're done with that phase of our podcast career.
We can go nuts. Okay. Cool. Well, I'm gonna go.
Like nut men, damn it.
What?
Man, you and your stupid nuts.
You're talking.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a late title entry.
Yeah, no. She's talking about my Breath of Fire streams. They're enemies that are like little, like cute little dudes that have they're like little Lego men, but they have acorns for heads. They're adorable, but they're nut men. And so there are jokes about
talking
nuts.
About his damn nuts, and I'm like, stop shoving your nuts in my face, Cole. Nuts.
I hate fighting those things. Their evade is so goddamn high.
Yeah, you got dodgy nuts. Come on. So anyway, that's the thing that only people who are in the Breath of Fire stream know about. So
go watch
until
those.
Now.
Yeah. I think maybe I included some of that in the condensed versions. So if people get impatient, they can see those too.
There you go. Cool. Anyway, yes, you're gonna go.
I'm gonna go. I still have to edit and release. Today is early abject suffering. So miles to go before I sleep.
All right. Good luck, man.
Take care, everybody. Hanging out with you guys. Have a good week. Around.